Just before we start, was there any questions from last week? Is there any questions that you have that I missed? I was supposed to follow up some questions. Unfortunately, I didn't have access to the chat from last week and I didn't make a note of it. Is there any questions that I might have to do it next week if I, but was there any questions from last week that were left unattended? No? Specifically questions from last week that people might have typed and they were not answered.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh.
Walaikum salam.
I have a question. It took me time to type it. So can I just mention it?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, it's just regarding in Dua Qunut, the text mentions that, you know, when you're doing it by yourself, you make it singular. My question is if you have intention to make dua, you know, for like other people, for the ummah or collectively, but you're doing it by yourself, can you make it plural?
I mean, it's firstly, dua qunut is sunnah. If someone does it in a plural, I can't see any reason why there will be an issue with, wallahu alam. I mean, as a general rule, you do individual and then plural, the imam does on behalf of everybody, but maybe that's more, if you do it for everybody else, I guess in line with Surah Fatiha. I don't know. That's a good question. If someone did it, I don't think that it doesn't invalidate or anything like that, but as for the standard practice, I mean, mashallah, you have a very good heart, you know, to make dua for others. Is the standard dua, do you understand, in terms of conformity to the sunnah, wouldn't it be better to do the dua that Rasulullah SAW taught, the way he was taught, and only the imam gets exemption of making plural? But then if someone made intention to make dua for others, wallah alam, I mean, there's two things here. But the dua itself is sunnah, right? Even if you didn't do it, your witr is fine. So it's not like a fundamental aspect of it. But I think more, it's probably the reason why it's been mentioned, why they wouldn't even mention the option is that it'll be more closer to a sunnah to do individual dua. Wallahu alam. I'll make a note of it. I'll see if I, in the commentaries if it mentions anything.
Okay. Jazakallah khair.
I didn't really answer it, but waffle through it. Any other questions before we start, inshallah? All right. So we'll commence, inshallah. So as per the usual thing, we'll go through Ajab al-Jaliyah and we'll go through the, we'll go through Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Muhammad al-Nasali ala Rasul Kareem. So we'll do a recap now of from Ajab al-Jaliyah, what we went last week through Bidayat al-Abid. As I mentioned, this is rapid fire, but there are some things in here. You'll probably notice that it's got much more detail than Bidayat al-Abid. There's a question, when does a book become a classic book? You know, when does Ajab al-Jaliyah become a old book, you know, a old matan? I mean, there's a 300-year gap, 250-year gap between the two books, right? So at what point, at which stage does an alim write a book that becomes the, you can say that this is now a standard text in the madhab, which corresponds, it's in line with all the books that are done before, but it's a new way of presenting. So you see like Sheikh Amir Bahjat in TJ Masjid Nabawi, his poem on the thing, or Sheikh, what's his name? Fadfari from India, he wrote a poem on Hanbali fiqh. When do they become the standardized and are they adopted by the Hanbalis over time or not? Maybe it's a matter of acceptance from Allah, qabool from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, wallahu alam. So section Adhan, so this is the Salat, the beginning of Salat. Remember the two sections, two halves we did over the first 2 weeks. We did Tahara, first half of Tahara, second half of Tahara. And then we started Salat last week with Bidayat al-Abid. I'm just going to recap here. The ruling of Adhan Iqama is that they are Fard Kifaya, communally obligatory on free Fard Kifaya, on free men who are not traveling. It is Sunnah for an individual and those traveling. It is Makruh for women, even if it's without raising the voice. It will not be correct unless done in order and with continuity as normally understood by people from when you hear it. That's too much of a gap. That means it's not continuous. Adhan or Iqama to be done by one person completely with intention, meaning two different people can do adhan and iqama, but if one adhan is done by one person and one iqama is done by one person, it will not be correct if some of the adhan or iqama is done by one person and then completed by the another. The muadhan must have six prerequisites, and they are to be a Muslim male, sound, intellect, discerning, able to speak, upright, even if it is external. In the heart, we don't know. Is adhan or iqama acceptable before that it's time or not? Neither is acceptable before its time, except for the adhan of fajr, if it can be done after midnight. Its arkan are to raise one's voice as long as it is not done for those who are present only. It is sunnah for the muadhan to have a loud voice, be trustworthy, knowledgeable of the salat time, be pure, that is in a state of wudu, be standing for both, that is for adhan and iqama. What is the sunnah for the one who hears the muadhan or muqim? Muqim is the mukabbir, also called the mukabbir, the one who does the iqama. It is sunnah for the muadhan and the one who hears him or hears the muqim to repeat the salat, except for the one who says, when he says, hayya ala, that is to say, hayya ala salah and hayya ala falah, then in response to that, one should say, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah, there is no might or strength except with Allah. However, after the tathweeb, which is when the muadhan during the fajr adhan says, salatu khayru min an-nawm, prayer is better than sleep, one should reply, sadaqta wa bararta, you spoke the truth and you have done good. Afterwards, iqama, one should say, aqama Allahu adamaha. After the adhan, the salawat on the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and the following dua should be recited, Allahumma rabbi hadhihi da'wati tamma wa salati al-qa'ima, ati muhammadan wasila wa fadila wa ba'tha maqam muhammad alladhi wa'adta. These are all the dua books. There are slight variations in some, depending on the book. Is it haram to leave the masjid after the adhan? Not. Once the adhan is called, it is haram to leave the masjid without an excuse or intending of returning. Or as we mentioned last week, if you're going to pray, you know you're going to get the jamaat in another masjid. Section on ruling of salat. Upon whom is salat wajib? Salat is wajib on every Islamically obligated person who is not in a state of hayd or nifas. As long as the person remains sane, the obligatory salat will remain. Salat is correct for a person that has reached the age of discernment and he will have a reward for it. It is the duty of the guardian to order him at the age of 7 and him at the age of 10 for non-performance. 10 means the completion of the 10th lunar year. Whoever abandons salat, denying it being wajib, becomes a kafir. I mean, obviously, hitting is an extreme measure. I mean, if you've been telling the child from the age of 7, that's like how many hundreds of salat, 5 times salat, hundreds and hundreds of times have been, so then other methods can be taken to make sure until the, and after the baligh, you can remind them and warn them and so forth, but then they are responsible themselves. Whoever abandons salat, denying it being wajib, becomes kafir. The timing of salat, zuhr is immediately after zenith of the sun until the shadow of an object is the same as the object in addition to the shadow that was there at zenith. I explained this last week, which is a recap. Asr immediately follows zuhr, and then the preferred time of asr, the better time to do it, is until the shadow of the object is double the object in addition to the shadow that was present at zenith. So you can say the start of asr time is the Shafi'i time as per the calendars, and the end of it is the start of the Hanafi time. Then after this time is a time of necessity, and it is haram to delay the time of Asr until the time, this time. The time of necessity extends until sunset. So it's not qada till Maghrib, after Maghrib. It's only qada after Maghrib, but it's haram to leave it to that end time between after the two shadow length, after the Hanafi time length, until the end. However, if you're in a country where the Hanafi may be praying, because that's their start time, sometimes they might pray half an hour, 1 hour later after that. Let's say the start of their time is 6 o'clock and they pray 7 o'clock and Maghrib is 9 o'clock, as it happens here in Australia. Your jama'ah, salat with jama'ah, is what your local masjid, that's their schedule, right? So if they're following for example, the Hanafi fiqh, as is in the case in many masjids in Australia, maybe in your part of the world as well, then that is your salat timetable. Then you go by that. Maghrib is after the setting of the sun until the disappearance of the red twilight. Isha is preferable after disappearance of the red twilight until the end of the first third of the night. This is followed by the time of necessity, which extends until before Fajr. It doesn't mean you should leave it after the third. You should do it before the third, but it's not qada until there might be some necessity, right? Emergency, and you can delay it without worrying that you've missed this time of salat. Subh or Fajr starts from the start of Fajr, true dawn, until sunrise. Is salat tatawwu sunnah, which is one is most basic. Salat tatawwu is sunnah. The most virtuous are those which are prayed in jama'ah. The most emphasized kusuf, istisqa, the drought prayer. Kusuf is the eclipse prayer. Then tarawih, then witr. Witr is a minimum one rakat and a maximum 11 rakat. Its time is between Isha and the start of Fajr. Qunut is done after ruku'. However, it is permitted before ruku'. The dua of Qunut is there. I won't go through that. Hands are raised from the beginning of the above dua, and at the end, the face is wiped with them. What are the emphasized rawatib sunnahs? They are the 10 rawatib muakkada sunnahs, emphasized sunnahs performed with fard prayers, 2 rakat before dhuhr, 2 rakat after it, 2 rakat after maghrib, 2 rakat after isha, and 2 rakat before fajr. It is sunnah to make qada of these, and witr if missed. Sunnah to make qada of these. Remember that when we also went through the hadith last week of the 4 being before dhuhr as per the hadith, for the person, and that reward is given, a place, a palace is built for him, house is built for him in Jannah. How many rakats is Taraweeh and when is it performed? Taraweeh consists of 20 rakats. They are prayed in twos during Ramadan between Isha and Witr. It is preferred that the Sunnah of Isha are prayed before Taraweeh. How many prerequisites are there for Salat and what are they? There are 9 prerequisites of Salat. Islam, being of sound mind, discernment, being in a state of purity when one is able to do so, entering the Salat of the Salat time, covering of the awrah, part of the body that needs to be covered for Salat, avoiding filth, which may not be overlooked, whether it be on the body of the worshipper or in his clothes or the place of prayer when one is able to do so. Facing the Qibla when possible, and intention. How many arkan of Salat are there? What are they? There are 14 arkan of Salat, Qiyam or standing upright for one who is able. The opening takbir, reading Fatiha in the correct order with the 11 shaddas. If one shadda is omitted, because a shadda is made up of 2 letters, right? So is a letter is left out and he does not go back to correct it, the Salat will be invalid. If one does not know Fatiha and knows only one ayat, then he must repeat it for the duration of reciting Fatiha. So this is good to know this, especially when somebody becomes Muslim, new Muslim, then you can explain this, tell them this. You know, like, obviously they can learn very quickly. Fatiha has only 7 verses. Remember that, A'udhu Billah, Bismillah, Ameen, Subhanakallahumma, all these are sunnahs before and after. So those 7 verses, they should be learned in a, like, that should be priority number one in terms of learning for the salah, other than takbir at the opening. So takbir, then Fatiha prioritized for them. Ruku, raising from ruku with intent. Like, you're not getting up because you're scared of something. You saw a spider and you got scared, right? I'tidal, or pausing while standing. Sujood, raising from sujood. Raising, sitting between the 2 sajidas. The conduct all arkan actions to be done, to conduct all the arkan actions calmly. The last tashahud, which is, that is say, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad, sitting for tashahud and sitting for 2 salams. 2 salams in the fard salat, which is to say, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. As for nafal and janazah prayer, saying 1 salam is sufficient. Performing the arkan in order as mentioned above. There are 8 wajib of salat. They are takbir, other than the opening takbir, saying Sami Allahu Alaihi Hamida by the imam and the individual worshipper, saying Rabbana wa kalhamd by the imam, the follower and the individual worshipper, saying Subhana Rabbi al-Azim in ruku, saying Subhana Rabbi al-A'la in sujood, Rabbi ghfirli once between the sajdas, the first tashahud, sitting for the first tashahud. Tashahud is to say, I won't go through the dua, you can, the well-known dua for tashahud. What are the verbal sunnahs of salat? Some of the verbal sunnahs are the opening dua istiftah, subhanakallahumma, saying ta'awuz, bismillah, ameen, after fatiha, the surah after fatiha, these are all sunnahs. Imam to recite audibly in the appropriate places, like I mentioned last week, it's a sunnah, not wajib. If in asr, imam read loudly and maghrib read softly, he's done something khilaf sunnah, but the salat is valid. Doing so is makruh for a follower, but an individual worshipper can choose. Imam or an individual worshipper can say, which means that if you're praying by yourself at home, let's say you're supposed to pray in jamaat, but you happen to pray by yourself, you can read maghrib salat loudly or soft quietly. Imam or individual worshipper can say after tahmid, mil as-samawat wa mil al-ard, rabbana wa galham, mil as-samawat wa mil al-ard, mil ma'ashid, mil shayin ba'ad. This is like the complete dua for the imam, not for the follower. The reason is that Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, why the humble, is it's because he specifically says, say Rabbana wa lakal hamd. So when he gives the order, then the humblies are very particular that for the follower is to say Rabbana wa lakal hamd. That's an order. So that is the most best thing to do. There are variations, other people recited, but what came from directly from Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam as an order, the most strongest view is say Rabbana wa lakal hamd. Tasbih of ruku, sajda, and raghu khfili to be done more than once. Salat on the Prophet's family in the tashahud, asking barakah for them as well. Dua after the last tashahud. Asking barakah is Allah mubarak ala Muhammad. This is sunnah. What are the sunnah actions in salat? There are many, they're called hay'at. And I've got a long list of them here. I mentioned only a few briefly. In this book, there's quite a lot. In other books, there are even more details in this. Raising hands with the opening takbir. These are sunnah actions. Raising hands before going for ruku, raising hands, rising from ruku. As opposed to the Shafi'is, we don't have raising the hands after get up from the second rakat, the first tashahud. So getting up from that, I think they have when they get up from tashahud, only sitting, which is like a 3 or 4 rakat salat, when they get up, they do a takbir, raise their hands. We only have in 3 places, opening takbir, before and after ruku. Placing the right hand over the left hand under the navel when reciting. As for the madhab, the position is of tying the hands is below the navel, below the belly button. Looking at the place of sajda, praying a short salat if one is imam, making the first rakat longer than the second, having a gap of one hand span between the feet while standing, so the feet shouldn't be too close together, grasping the knees during the ruku, heading ahead in straight with the back during ruku, having the arms away from the sides and belly from the and from the thighs, to have a gap between the knees, have the hands up to the shoulders during sujood, right? So like that. Place the hands on the thighs when sitting between the sajdas and in tashahud with hands stretched out and fingers joined together. So when you're sitting, the fingers are joined together. To clasp the small finger and the ring finger on the right hand and to make a ring of the thumb and the middle finger, and to point with the index finger whenever the name of Allah is mentioned. So 4 times, as mentioned last week, to raise the finger and then drop it down. There's a picture, Dr. Mutlaq, my teacher. So the picture of someone, I'm getting the opposite hand. I'm trying to look at the camera. So it's like raised up a little bit like that. Like if you put it flat, the fingers raised. I mean, there's nothing in the book that says it should be left like this. It just says left pointing. If you drop it down or that, I mean, it's the same, pretty much similar thing. But when you're at the name of Allah, it's raised up like 1, 2, all right, which I mentioned last week. There are more details of these and other sunnahs in larger texts. I mean, they, mashallah, like they get in these compact texts, they get a lot of information across in with minimal words. The ruling sajda sahu is a sunnah if one utters something of salat in salat where they should not, forgetfully. It is mubah to do sujood sahwa for omitting a sunnah. We went through this last week. It is wajib when one performs an extra rakat, a sajda, an extra sajda, extra standing or extra sitting, even for a short time, such as duration of a jalsa istiraha, just a little pause when he's sitting down, right? Or resting while sitting before getting up for the next rakat. Salam before completion of prayer. Omitting a wajib forgetfully. Doubt on whether one has performed an extra an act. Method of such a sahwa, it is to make 2 sajdas, either after tashahud and before salam, or it is after salam of salat, then another final tashahud is done, another salam is performed. We went through this in detail last week. What is makruh in salat for a worshipper? It is makruh to only read Fatiha if it is sunnah to read a surah also. If repetition of surah Fatiha, looking around along with moving the head without necessity. These are makruh. They reduce the reward of salat. They're not haram, and they don't invalidate the prayer, but you should avoid them. Closing one's eyes to carry which distracts, to have forearms, maybe switch off your phones, to have forearms stretched out on the ground in sajda for the men, like they put their hands, fidgeting, placing hands on the hips, stretching, opening one's mouth, placing something in the mouth, facing an image, praying in the direction while the person faces him, direction of person speaking, direction of someone asleep, direction of a fire, direction of which diverts his attention, touching pebbles, we went through this last week, leveling soil without need. Remember, people prayed on the bare dirt, fanning oneself with a fan. So, you know, those old fans, not electrical fans, we're talking about the paper fans, people wait to wave, maybe it's very hot, cracking fingers, touching the beard, holding one's clothes. If one of these becomes excessive, normally understood to be so, then salat is invalidated. What are the invalidators of salat? Salat is invalid by everything that invalidates tahara or purification, exposes awrah intentionally, turning one's back to the qibla when one is able to face it, come in contact with najasa that is inexcusable for one's doing salat, if it is not removed immediately, customarily excessive movement, not part of salat other than salat al-khawf. Salat al-khawf, you're facing the enemy. So you will have to do things that to make sure that that's part of the, because you're facing the enemy, so it might require to do that. That's an exception. Leaning by someone who is fit without necessity. So these things, they are invalidators of salat. Intentionally doing an extra rukun action, like doing an extra ruku or sajda, doing some rukun action before others, intentionally doing salam before completion of salat, intentionally, so these are all intentional, intentionally reciting in a manner that it changes the meaning, sutra placed far while one is naked, annulling one's intention, intending to break one's intention. I'll just finish this list. Acting with doubt in an intention, wavering intention. So once you've made the intention, that is your intention. If you have doubt about intention or you waver in the intention, did I make intention for Zuhr or not, then your salat is invalidated. Dua for desires of this world. And there's interesting in fiqh books, they mention like things, someone makes dua, Allah feed me an apple and marry me. You know, like there's a duas that are not from the Quran or Sunnah, and the duas specifically for satisfying desires. Using the kaf of second person Arabic to other than Allah Ta'ala or His Messenger, Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, laughing. So this is to do with grammatical. So iyyaka, the ka there refers to Allah. To only you we worship. If you're using this to address somebody else, right? Or assalamu alayka ayyuhan nabi, which has been quoted there, right? So this is, you know, Allah sending salam to Rasulullah salam. But the thing is that you're using it for something other than what Allah has told you. Laughing loudly, speaking even if forgetfully, going in front of the imam invalidating his salat. So if the imam invalidates his salat, the followers invalidate his salat, right? Once his salat is invalid, another person can't just step forward. I know some other madahib, like in Shafi'i madhab, a bit more flexible, but the imam's intentions and state is very important for the followers. Performing salat before the imam intentionally or forgetfully and does not repeat it afterwards. Eating, drinking, except for what is customarily understood to be a small amount or a large amount out of ignorance. Salat does not break out if someone swallows without chewing what was stuck in one's teeth, falls asleep for a small duration and speaks therein, or during qira'ah utters something else. Is overcome by sneezing, yawning or crying and utters two letters. So these things don't break. So that's it. That was what sort of we covered with a bit more detail. Since last week there was some... Yeah, because it's like a community, right? When the university that Muslims there, you're not travelers. The brother's asking the question, we're in university. And someone should give. There's a fardhi kifayah for that community that is there. You're not musafir, you're locals there. Then, and that's where you're praying jama'ah. Then you have to, if one adhan is done at the start, that's sufficient for that time, for that location. So you don't need to do multiple adhans. But adhan should be done. You know, it takes a couple of minutes and it's an obligation. If it's done, then it's uplifted from everybody, you know. But if nobody does it, then you're all in trouble. It says that people have not reached the age of puberty. I don't know. Do children who haven't reached puberty be punished for not offering salat? So it's a condition. It's like they reach the age of discernment where they know right and wrong, but they're not baligh yet. Are they punished for it? Which is a separate question. It's about a matter of akhirah. I mean, the obligation is there because they understand. But are they excused till they're baligh? Like, that's the question, isn't it? Are they? I don't know. So I might make a note of that as well. Is it a sin if they're not baligh, right? That's a good question. Just making note of that. Um, how can I recite Fatiha when Imam doesn't make pause? You don't have to recite it because it's not it's sunnah in our madhab. If you don't recite his salat, is fine because Imam is read for you, right? If he's quiet in the middle, he leaves a gap, or between the ayat, he leaves a gap, or between the Fatiha and Surah, he gives a gap in, like, for example, madhab salat, then you can read it then. But if he doesn't leave a gap, then you don't read it. Now, madhab is not an obligation for the follower. It's not wajib for him to read Fatiha. In the Shafi'i, it's compulsory, and they have to make a lot of effort to make sure they get it done as well, even if they're following behind the Imam, even if the Imam is reading. In the Hanafi fiqh, there's no one reads behind. In the Hanafi fiqh, no one behind is obliged. The Hanbali is probably the most easy in the sense that if you do it, it's good. If you don't do it, it's fine. And when do you do it? In the quiet salats, like Zuhur, Asr, and in the third and fourth rakat, the Imam leaves a silence. But if he doesn't leave a silence, there's no obligation. His Fatiha is enough for you. No, you have to make dua in Arabic. So, yeah. In Salat, it has to be in Arabic. Like, it can be just done in the room. It doesn't have to be done outside. The Adhan doesn't have to be done like in an open ground and so forth, just as long as the Adhan is done. The Shafi'is, they pointed up. So the thing is that all the hadith that one mazhab uses, also the other madhahib are using as well. This is the interpretation of the madhahib of practicing all these hadith. So it's to do with language and how they understood the hadith. And when you look at it, then you realize that, in terms of moving the finger, some have taken it that is continuously, that the Malikis, the Hanbalis have taken the four, the Hanafis and Shafis that just raise it once, and the Shafi'is keep it up, pointed up, after they said a shahada, basically, pretty much. They raise it up and they just drop it, but it's pointed forward. Hanbalis drop it down. Some say drop it down like this, like a little bit like that, and some say drop it down. You know, I mean, it doesn't mention in the book like how you actually point it. It's still pointing regardless if it's very low or like that. The Hanafis leave it, or some leave it, they just do the shahada and leave it. Remember, these are small details in the overall scheme of things as sunnahs or acts according to all. I'm just trying to do your questions before I start the text. Correct. If the Imam, don't say that word, if the Imam passes win, there's a more polite way of saying it, the Ma'mum prayer is also invalidated. So the Imam has to put somebody forward before he breaks his wudu, put it that way. Yeah. From the beginning of Tahiyyat, I don't think so. I don't know. To keep the finger up from beginning till end, I've never. No, I understand. That's why I'm telling you. That's I get it. Yeah. It's actually very rude in the academic setting. But anyway, no problem. Inshallah. All right, let's get the book started because your questions always take a lot of time. So today we're doing good, alhamdulillah. Inshallah. Let's see. Let's see how we. I'll just start the slides. Can you see the slides? Yep. Okay, great. Here we are. No problem, inshallah. All right. So we start the next section of Salat. I'm just going to close the chat for a minute. Let's leave all the questions. Keep the questions in your mind, and we'll leave the questions all at the end because we can do it in sections because then we'll have to go back and revisit it. So just let me finish a section. I'll ask if there's a question. You guys have your questions ready, and then we'll just do it section by section. But don't type the question because then I feel like attending to it. And then time sort of, we lose a lot of time trying to go back between the book and questions. So just hold the questions till we finish. I'll ask, is there any question? Have them typed, just paste it in, and then I'll try to answer them, inshallah. Salatul Jama'ah for the five offered salats is wajib. You probably notice the difference between this and the main book. Personally, I like it. If you see the translation I've done, I don't like over translations. I don't know why Muslim translators, Allah reward them for their efforts, they over translate books. We have Islamic terms. Salat is salat. Once you've explained salat in the first sentence of the book, the rest of the book, they should use the word salat. Prayer is a generic word. It could mean dua in English. It could mean a salat as well. Personally, we should become familiar with the Islamic terms that our scholars and jurists use. And once you teach the person, not that we don't just dump a lot of terminology, gradually, that's why I replaced a lot of Sheikh John Starling, Hafidhullah's translation. Hope to meet him one day, inshallah. I never met him or talked to him. But I prefer that we replace the translations and our language. If you see Muslim languages from Indonesia, Malaysia, whatever, till, West Africa, farad and farad and salat and so these, yeah, there are local words as well, but we are familiar with Islamic terminology, especially fiqh terminology. Law is very important. We have a standardized Islamic law across the whole Muslim world. There's a code of ulama speak, have a certain speak, and they this is the language of Sharia. So I'm not talking about Arabic in the sense of, it is in Arabic, obviously. I don't want you to become Arabists. And but like the Islamic terms have been incorporated into Pashto and Urdu and Farsi and Malay and whatever languages that are out there, and Somali and whatever the languages are, they've incorporated Islamic terms. So I just sort of replaced it a bit, just so we get familiar. Salatul Jama'ah. So Jama'ah is praying Salat in a congregation, is wajib upon capable. Right. So if a person is not physically capable, for example, they're sick, they can't make it to the masjid, then they are excused. Free, so it's not on a slave. Men, so it's not fard, it's not wajib on women, even while traveling. Right. It is not a precondition. So salat in the masjid is not wajib, but that's generally where we do jama'ah. Salat in jama'at is wajib. Right. It is not a precondition and thus valid from an individual whose reward. One second. Yeah, I'm just looking at my notes. So salat being wajib is, just let one brother in. Salat being wajib is one of the ifradat of the madhab, one of the among the four madahib. It's only the view of the Hanbali say that is wajib, right? In the other madahib, it is not. It's not wajib. And for the five-time salat, not other salats. It is not a precondition and thus valid from an individual whose reward will not diminish with an excuse. Right? So if you prayed salat without a jama'at, your salat is valid, even though you've done something wrong by not praying it in jama'at. So you have to pray in jama'at, but if you did it without jama'at, your salat is valid. Right? It's not that your salat is not valid. Right, so it's not it does not invalidate the salat if you pray by yourself. It's just that you lose a reward reward of jama'at. It is convened with two, even with a woman or slave, but not a young child for a fard salat. Apart from Jummah and Eid salats, Jummah and Eid salat, 40 people are required. It is haram to lead salat in a masjid that has an appointed imam. Interesting. It is haram to lead salat in a masjid that has an appointed imam. You're not allowed to make before the imam, like you make a jama'at before the imam. It is invalid. The salat is invalid except with his permission. Or the imam is there's no dislike in him if you pray a jama'at. Or his lateness is at the time ends. So he's so late for leading salat and everyone's waiting for him. Right, he's the appointed imam. He's unreasonably late to the point of that this time of that the preferred time of the prayer is about to end. Right, so generally people don't wait. We don't have that respect, unfortunately. This time I'm an imam, so people do not wait for the imam. If I'm 1 minute late, we have 10 imams ready to lead the salat. But because imam is people should not lead salat. There's a hadith, right? People should not lead salat. Rasulullah said it with emphasis. One should not lead salat in a person's where he's been appointed or authorized. So he's been given an authority of leading Salat, whether it be by the state or by an organization or whatever, but that is his role that he's been given. People should not step in, or they should not sit, Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, people should not sit in his special seat. So a person might have in his home a place that he sits. You should not go sit. You should not lead Salat in somebody else's house. You're a good Qari, you're an Alim, Sheikh, Mufti, but if in somebody else's house, he's the Imam, he's the head of the house. So you're on his turf. I'm just simplifying it so you understand. You're in his space, right? He's the man of the house. Similarly with the Masjid Imam, like you cannot, like I said this to brothers, I said it jokingly, like I don't have an issue with people. They had to leave, right? So when they, as they were leaving, I said to them that you should have asked the Imam first. Like you should have taken permission. They laughed because they don't know this masala. They think it's some, I'm just making a joke. You know, and I said, no, it's a real thing. I said, next time, take permission before you do a jamaat. One of the bad things about that is that you upset the imam, obviously, because he's coming to do his job, and you sort of split the body of the Muslims into another jamaat by praying the second or early jamaat. Whoever makes takbir, unless it's prior arrangements and so forth, it's understood, that's a different thing. Workplaces, offices, or masjids in workplaces, you know, that's a different thing. Whoever makes takbir before the imam's first taslim has joined the congregation, and whoever catches the ruku has caught the rak'ah. So if the imam is just before salam, you say Allahu Akbar, you've got the salat, right? If you just, before the imam gets up from ruku, you've got the rak'ah. I think everybody knows this. It is recommended to join the imam, however found. Whatever is caught with him is its end, and whatever is made up is its beginning. So if you come, this is referring to a masbuq, someone who comes late. Somebody comes late, let's say you came in Maghrib Salat, you missed the first two rakats, right? You are now, it's recommended, where do you join the imam? If the imam in sajda, what do some people do? They wait, check if the imam is going to stand up. He's going to stand up anywhere, he's going to sit. If he sits, then we join him. You're not supposed to do that. As for the hadith, it is sunnah, it's recommended, it's mentioned, it's recommended, sunnah, that wherever you find the imam, you should join him. That means you do an extra sajda. It's kind of like you're belittling. One is the instruction of Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, but also you are sort of like, oh, it's just an extra sajda, like I'm just going to avoid it, save my energy. So I mean, that's like a sajda is such a beautiful thing that a person tries to avoid. But so a person should join wherever the imam is. Whatever that you get from that, so let's say you missed, as I mentioned, the example of the two rakats are missed. Then you pray the third rakat, which is your first rakat. And then you're going to pray two rakat afterwards. In actions, right, in action, what's the hadith say? That if you've missed, مَا أَدْرَكْتُمْ فَصَلُّوا وَمَا فَاتَكُمْ فَقْبُوا. Rasulullah said, what you get, like if you catch whatever you've caught from the salat, you pray. Whatever you've missed, do qada, like you do it afterwards. So what are you making for afterwards in terms of rakats? The two rakats, they're the first two rakats that you've missed, right? But how are you praying them? Anybody want to answer the question? Like when you finish, you miss the first two rakat in Maghrib with the imam. What's the first thing, and it's your second rakat, but what do you do when you sit down after the two sajdas in the first rakat that you're making up afterwards? Anybody? You can just speak. You're doing tashahud, right? So you're doing like four tashahud. You could be doing four tashahud. You are doing four tashahuds. So what I was saying was after the two sajdas, when you're doing the first rakat that you're making up afterwards, you don't sit, you don't get up, do you? Like the first rakat that you missed. Because you're making up the two rakat that you missed. You're making up the two rakat that you missed. In the first rakat of salat, there is no tashahud. But when you get up after salat, when you're praying the two rakat, in the first rakat, what are you doing? You're doing qada, not qada, but you're making up the two rakat that you missed at the start. But the form of your salat is the end of the salat. But what you're actually making up is the beginning of salat. So you read your fatihas and surahs in those two rakats. The du'as will be read like the beginning of salat. The form will be like the end of salat. Remember that. I was checking the question about, is that understood? Like at the, if you're doing those two rakat afterwards, the form is at the end of maghrib. The form of it is the maghrib, the shakal of it, the form of it, the appearance of it is like the end of salat. But what you're actually making up is the beginning of salat. Hence the surah and fatiha is read for both. Right? The fatiha and surah is read for both. You don't do istiftah, subhanakallahumma, in those two rakats. Right? Remember, you're doing the recital of the first rakat because you've missed that. You're not at the beginning of salat. That's gone. So you've missed that on the subhanakallahumma at the beginning. Right? Like if you join Maghrib, you know, so you missed it. No. You're making the two rakats, but the form, the actions are of the end of salat. But in reality, what are you making up? Like, what are the two rakats that you missed? Have you missed the end of salat or the beginning of salat? You missed the beginning of salat. But the way when you pray it afterwards, you pray it at the end of salat. Hence why there's in the two rakats that you've missed, there's the tahiyyat in each one, right? The shahud in each one, right? Because it's like the end of salat to maintain the form. All right. Is that the right slide? Okay. The following are shouldered by the imam for the followers. So you're absolved from these things because the imam does. First is qira'at. Fatiha, imam is doing for you, like I mentioned earlier. So you're not obliged to. If you do it in the silence, it's fine. The saktat, if you do it, it's fine. The sajda sahwa and sajda tilawa, there is no sajda sahwa. If you missed something or did something wrong, there's no sajda tilawa. So if you read ayat of tilawat in your salat, you don't have to do it. Like the imams, like you're absolved of that. The dua of qunut, the imam is reading that. You're just saying ameen, if it's in obviously in jama'at. The first tashahud, it preceded by one rakah. Right? So this last one is, the first tashahud, just 1 second. Just moving the chat box out of the way. Just trying to think of another example for this one. So if you join, like for example, in a 4 rakat salat, in the second rakat, right? So you miss one rakat. So what's going to happen? You're praying tashahud in your first rakat, because you're following the imam, right? So you're doing tashahud in the first rakat. And after salat, and then in the third rakat, somebody else coming in. Okay. In your second rakat, you're not doing tashahud. That obligation is lifted by the imam as well. All right. It is preferred to begin its action after the imam, coinciding with him in them, or the salam in them, or the salam is disliked. It is haram to precede him, to do the action before him, making the takbirat al-ihram while coinciding with him or before he concludes does not count. Right? If your takbirat al-ihram coincides with the imam or before he concludes, does not count. Intentionally, so in terms of matching the actions of the imam, you have 3 states. One is haram, that is to be ahead of the imam. So if you're ahead of the imam in actions, this is haram. The beginning takbir tahrim is special because that's the you're starting commencing the act, right? But the other actions, if you're before the imam, it's haram. It's makruh if you match the imam, and it's sunnah if you do after him. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Ida kabbara kabbir." When he makes takbir, Allahu Akbar, you make takbir. When he makes ruku, you make ruku. Meaning, when he makes it, then you make it, right? And Sahaba radiallahu anhu said, we didn't make sajda until Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They were waiting, standing until his head touched the ground. Meaning that there was a long gap between the they weren't following him into the action. They waited till, meaning there was a mubalagha, you could say exaggeration, or making sure that Rasulullah was ahead. They followed his instruction in a particular way. Rasulullah was already in the next action, right? Reaching, and then they caught up with Rasulullah like that. Intentionally, without excuse or forgetfully making salam before him, without repeating it after him, is invalid. It is sunnah for the imam to lighten it while maintaining completion, to make the recitation, just 1 second. Let's close the box. It is sunnah for the imam to lighten the prayer, to make it while maintaining completion, to make the recitation in the first longer than the second, and to wait for anyone coming in, as long as it does not harm the followers. It happened, like tonight I was leading Salat, Maghrib, I can hear people walking. Generally for Ruku, I don't extend it too long because I have old people, so they can catch the rakat. If they'd like, you can just hear, I would say two extra just to make sure they get the Ruku. But if somebody, I can hear, but for Tahiyat at the end, like before Salam, you know, they're going to miss the Jama'ah. So I'll wait a little bit extra, to make sure that they don't miss, they get the takbir in and they join the Jama'ah. But I've told the mosque that if you start running, because our mosque is we have wooden floors, right? So if somebody starts running from the door, you can they're running for like 10 seconds. So when you do that, I said, it makes me go, want to get up from ruku quickly. You're sort of like rushing me. And I said that it's not fair on the brothers or sisters, especially the elderly, that you insist that you walk slowly, like don't disturb the people. But anyway. Any question about that section, before we continue to imam it? I think there's one question. Does it break the salat if one goes ahead of the imam? No, as far as I know, it doesn't. Just let me make sure. This is other than takbir al-tahrim, obviously. Good question. Yeah, so if in the commentary, the author Al-Ba'ali, rahmahullah ta'ala, he says that if somebody precedes the imam, it's haram. So whoever makes ruku or sajda or gets up before the imam intentionally, then it's required for him to go back until he follows the imam. If he's alim, he knows, right? If he refuses while he knows intentionally, then his salat breaks, right? But not for the one who's forgetful or for the ignorant. Is that clear? So it's a nuanced, detailed answer. Okay, alhamdulillah. Good. Alhamdulillah. All right, imamship. It's a good word, huh? Good translation, imam at the imamship. The first time I heard it, this term, I think maybe Sheikh John, he invented this word. I don't know. The most eligible to lead the Salat is the best reciter and the most knowledgeable. I mean, this is in the situation where generally when we appoint imams of masjids, it's very rare that we don't appoint someone's not an alim or a hafidh or someone's a qari, right? That's, I think it's a standard. But it could be in the past, maybe in villages, people might not have access to hafaz and ulama and so forth. So they might appoint somebody. But this isn't the case where there's no imam. There's no appointed imam in the area. And therefore, there's a criteria of who's best to be leading salat, right? So there's a hadith, the one, Aqrahum, the most better reciter, right? So the first priority is given the madhab is to the person who can recite well, specifically Surah Fatiha. His makharij is correct and his shaddas are correct. You know, like he's actually recite and talaffuz of the letters correct. Then the person who knows the fiqh of salat. What happens if there's a tussle between these two, right? So the next point, the reciter who does not know the ruling salat precedes the illiterate jurist. Illiterate here means the one who's unable to recite Surah Fatiha. He might know, well, it says jurist, but I'll be surprised if there's a jurist who doesn't know Surah Fatiha well, right? What he means by illiterate here, one who can't read Surah Fatiha, ummi. And the jurist here refers to the one who knows the fiqh of salat. I don't think it means faqih, like a jurist of, like when you read the word jurist, it means someone's like a great alim, right? So I think the translation maybe need to be adjusted. The one who knows the ruling of salat and the one who knows how to read Surah Fatiha. The ruling of salat guy doesn't know how to read Surah Fatiha properly. The guy who knows Surah Fatiha doesn't know Sajd al-Sahwu, doesn't know the ins and outs of salat. Priority is given to him because he knows Surah Fatiha properly. Right. Obviously, this is not talking about your local imam of your local masjid who's been appointed as imam. You prioritize someone who can read the Quran well above those who know the fiqh of salat. And then by the eldest in subsequent order, then the noblest, the ashraf. So, for example, like a Qurashi over somebody else. Does that Arab over non-Arab? I mean, does it apply today so much? Maybe in the past it did. Allahu a'lam. You know, like the what's considered like, I mean, I'm talking about from an Australian perspective. I'm in a Western country. Generally, we don't have these sort of, do we have ashraf here in Australia? Who's the ashraf? Like who's the nobility? You know, I think because the book is written in the feudal world, you know, when they had feudal lords and people of higher status and lower status. Allah alam, if that really does it have a real manifestation today? Maybe I'm talking from the West. I know that you're not all of you in the West. How does that even work? Because it's not a reality of our life, daily life, that we have feudal lords and so forth. And the most pious and scrupulous. Maybe the one way you can say the noblest in the society when there are problems, the people gravitate towards them. Right? Maybe this is my, based on just other definitions that I've heard, like when, who are the people who are the ashraf? They're not necessarily the most educated. They're not necessarily, because my family is from a tribal society, right? So these are who are the people that are sitting there making the decision? Like my family's from the northwest of Pakistan, right? So we have a thing called a jarga. Jarga is like a council, village council, panchayat in other places. Like you probably have in Malaysia, Dato, you know, maybe the Dato's can, is that it? Is that right? I think Dato can lead the Salat, maybe. That's like it's a title, like honorific, Dato, yeah. Someone who's rich. Okay, sorry. But it's not necessarily the rich person or the educated person. It's a person in the community, especially in villages. When there's a problem, everyone gravitates and they solve the problems of the community. You can say someone is like, generally nobility is like that. Like they were not just nobility just by family. They served the purpose. They were leaders, right? Wallahu alam. The most pious, the people of taqwa, the most pious and scrupulous. Lots are then drawn. If you can't agree, right, then the person, they draw lots, like a lottery. The man of the house and imam of the masjid, even if a slave, are more deserving. So a slave in his house, he's the man. You can't step over his authority, as I mentioned previously, except for someone who wields authority over them. For example, the ruler comes, right? Then he leads a salat. A free man is preferred over the fully and partially subjugated, and the partially subjugated is preferred over the fully subjugated. The resident, the seeing, the townsman, anyone with all the lender and the renter are all preferred over the opposites. So the resident, the muqim, is preferred over the musafir, the seeing over the, these are preferences, right? And a person, it's not like a fard to do this, but the person that you're putting forward as your leader, like what do you want to see in him? And you feel confident in your salah that he's your representative before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the resident over the traveler, the seeing over the blind, for various reasons, qibla, they're not so particular about tahara because they cannot see najasa. There's other reasons as well. The townsmen over the country people. The reason is, and this is, it's not an absolute rule, but people in the city have more, keep the company of ulama more. And because of that, the knowledge of the rulings of salat is more. You know, so, and the people in the villages, far off places, that are away from center civilization and language and education and ulama as well, then they will not know the rulings of salat properly. Anyone with wudu, right? So if it's a tussle between wudu and tayammum, the wudu guy is given preference to lead. The lender and the renter are all preferred, right? The one who lends out or rents out, he's over the one that is lending. Or so if somebody lends the clothes to somebody, and then the one that is lending it, he's preferred over the one that is getting clothes lended to, over the opposites. Leadership of a sinner is categorically invalid. Leadership, imamat, of a sinner, fasiq, is categorically invalid, right? Except for Jummah and Eid, if unable to pray behind another. So historically, you had, rulers used to lead the Eid Salah, right? People like Hajjaj bin Yusuf. And then what do you do when you have to pray, or some other zalims, or there were rulers that were known, they used to drink, right? Sahaba prayed behind. They had to pray because they have to pray their Eid and Jummah, and they couldn't know, or if they didn't attend, then it caused issues. But for daily salat, because you can have multiple jama'ats and so forth, then or even if you don't have a jama'at, you can avoid it because it's a fasiq. Like let's say he's an open drinker, or opens the imam is doing riba openly, right? Then one can avoid the jama'at behind such a fasiq. The issue of the beard is an issue that comes up. Sheikh Mutlaq was mentioning one of his durus about what about imam that shaves? Because in some places in the world, if you go, the imam shaves. And in our madhab, it's haram to shave. So if someone is shaving, he's doing publicly. But the thing is that there are understandings of some ulama, and maybe he's not doing it outright as a sin, disobedience. He's doing it out of following a certain view where there might be some leniency on that matter. So, and there could be other reasons. So we're not required to go to the level like in that, he mentioned that specific case in another dars of another book, that we're not required to delve into that deeply and regarding the conditioned imam. This is a mistake that I made. I wouldn't pray behind imam until I actually heard him say it and explained it in a lot of detail, that's something that we're not required to. This is talking about serious matters, not difference of opinion. On certain masail. Wallahu alam. It is valid behind the blind, the deaf, uncircumcised, a man with severed hands, feet or nose, and someone who often solecises. Solecise, read with lahan, such a tune without changing the meaning. But it's not valid behind a mute or disbeliever. Why would those things, some of them matter? So if someone, you know, because the hands and nose, some people might say, because you have to make sajda on seven limbs, right? So seven limbs. If he doesn't have hands, Now he doesn't. So, but this is the salat is valid behind. Or he doesn't have the nose. One of the things you have to do it on your nose, sajda. So would that be valid? It is not valid behind a mute, right? Someone who cannot speak, obviously, or a disbeliever. There is no leadership imamat for someone unable to meet a prerequisite or pillar, except with those like him, apart from the appointed imam of a masjid, whose deficiency will likely end. He is to pray seated, and those behind him pray behind him are to sit. It is valid to stand. So if the imam cannot stand, he prays sitting down. Everyone prays sitting. Better to pray sitting down behind him. If you stand, it's fine behind him. But you can pray. If he prays sitting down, you pray sitting down. I mean, subhanAllah, how much is the imam's? I mean, depends on, like, this imam must be, like, his position is secured or to make sure that he leads salat and he's in this role of salat, that he leads the salat if he's there at the masjid. Neither women nor a hermaphrodite. Hermaphrodite is intersex, right? So khunsa can lead men or hermaphrodites, nor can the discerning lead the mature in a fard salat. So we'll just go through that. A woman nor a hermaphrodite can lead men, right? Hermaphrodite cannot, women cannot lead men. Hermaphrodite cannot lead, because they could be a woman, right? And they can't lead a hermaphrodites either in salat, or themselves or each other. Hermaphrodites must be led by men as well, because it could be that this hermaphrodite is more a woman, while this hermaphrodite is more a man. Because it creates that doubt, then to avoid that, hermaphrodites cannot lead other hermaphrodites in salat. Nor can the discerning lead the mature in a fard. In fard salat, children cannot lead fard salat. They have to be baligh. There is no imamship for the following: the deliberately impure or contaminated with najasa. However, it is valid for the follower if both he and the follower were ignorant until its completion, or an illiterate. That is, someone cannot properly read the Fatiha, who renders an idgham. Idgham is when you combine two letters, what is not to be rendered as such, and whose solecise reads a lahu with a tune in a way which changes the meaning and is incapable of correcting himself, except for those with a similar condition. However, a young child can lead Taraweeh. A mumayyiz that has reached that age, that before Baligh, they can lead the Taraweeh. To stand in front of the congregation is recommended. The imam stand out from the congregation. If even for ihram, the salat is invalid performed in front of him, based on the back of the foot, right? Sorry, someone's mic is on. Can you switch the mic off, please? Jazakallah khair. To stand in front of the congregation is recommended for the imam. Even for ihram, the salat is invalid performed in front of him. So if the follower goes in front of the imam, how do you know that? What's he referring to? The toes or the back heel? It's referring to the heel. If the heel, the back of the, it's hard to demonstrate actually. If the heel is, the back of the feet is in front, right? The heel is in front, the follower is in front, the back of his feet is in front, right? Then the salat is invalidated. An individual, a hermaphrodite, is obliged to stand on his right, which is permitted for a woman, though preferred that she stands behind him. So if there's one man and one woman, let's say husband and wife, husband prays, then the wife, she can stand on the right, but she should stand behind, preferred to stand behind. As for another man or a hermaphrodite, khuntha, they should stand next to him like a man. The salat is not valid on his left while his right is vacant. Right? Salat is not valid on the left while the right is vacant, or is performed alone for the duration of at least one rakat. So if one rakat passes and the person came and he joined the saf, like for example, if you came into the masjid and there's no room, right, in the first saf, and you came and joined the second saf, but you knew that somebody's coming very soon, that's fine. But if it goes longer than one rakat, the salat is invalid. Yeah, the imam is standing at the front. If there's only one follower, he stands on the right. But if he stands on the left, I'm not sure in the camera what you're seeing, seeing left and right, but if the imam, generally the follower stands on the right of the imam, correct? Just a little bit behind, in front with the next to the imam, but not in front of the imam, right? But if he, but for no reason at all to go to the left, the salat is invalid for the follower. Right? If both are in the masjid, following is categorically valid if the imam's movements are known. Right? If they're not gathered inside, it is stipulated that the imam or those behind him are seen, even if just during a part of it. It is disliked for the imam to be elevated. So that's a separate masala. So the imam should be seen, or the back of the saf should be seen, right? Like inside the masjid, all you have to know is his actions, right? If there's walls and you're outside, you can't see the imam, and you can't see the back of the saf, there's no connection safs, then the salat will not be valid, right? You have to see, you have to be connected through sight at least to the jama'ah. The imam, it is disliked for the imam to be elevated a cubit or more. Cubit is, this is a cubit from the elbow to the tip of the fingers. It's about 50 centimeters. It's not standardized. There is a standardized zira. It's about 49 centimeters. And I think there's a black zira that one of the khalifas made. It's like 51. They used it for construction, right? Standardized measurement. But cubit's length. Or more above the follower, but not vice versa. The follower can be higher. That's why you have second story of masjids. If you go to Masjid al-Haram, it's got multiple floors, right? It's got multiple floors. That's fine. But the imam can't be elevated. Attending a masjid or congregation after eating onion, radish, etc., is disliked until the odor subsides. And this will apply to everything, anything that smells bad. All right, any questions? One question. No, if you can't see the saf and you're outside the masjid, voice is not enough. Generally, like if you think about it, like for example, I'll give you the example of haram because that's something that maybe most of us experience. The safs overflow, right? You know, so the safs overflow. I'm not sure in other madahib this is a view of this that you have to see or not the back of the saf or the back of the people, but I'm not sure about that madahib. But yeah, if you're outside, you have to see. There has to be a line of sight. Not to the imam, to the back of the saf. To the... What if the imamun is behind the imam, not on the right of the imam? Is that... is invalid? People... What do you mean? Like one person? Are you talking to... I don't know. I don't know. One, if one male follower is behind, I don't know. I'll make a note of that. What about women? Well, women can pray. One woman can pray behind it. It is invalid. Brother Ahmed saying, I'll have a look at it, but jazakallah khair for that. It's invalid if there's one male congregant to be behind the imam and there is only... That's right. It will be the same as astaghfirullah azim. It's midnight here. So, yeah, if the... I gave the example before that if a person prays with the imam, saf behind, right? He comes by himself and prays behind the imam by himself. So that will apply to the one person as well. Jazakallah khair. Connected the two dots for me. Getting old. But so yeah, if you're one person prays behind the imam, the salat is invalid. Yeah. Unless he's waiting for somebody to come and for that one rakat we mentioned earlier. These books are very compact. The masala is there, the answer is there. So I hope that's clear. But for a woman, she can pray. One woman can pray. She's supposed to pray behind the imam. So, but not for a man. Yeah, for a woman, like where she prays, that is a very good question. Like if she's praying behind in an area where she can totally not see, But then if she pray inside a masjid, she is inside the masjid, so she can hear the imam, right? And now masjid, we have a lady section that's got a full curtain, totally cut off from women, but it's inside the masjid. So she's connected to the jama'ah like that. But a woman that's praying outside, you know, the same rule applies. She still has to have a line of sight. Allah, sound would not be enough. All right. Excuses from congregation. Like, when can you miss jama'ah? Like, when is it? Not that it should do it, but when is excuse from it, right? The following case excuse, because it's wajib, but we know that life and circumstances don't afford us always the opportunity to pray jama'ah. When sick or fearful of sickness while not in the masjid. What is a rule that, if you want to remember a rule of leaving jama'at, either number one, by going, it will delay your shifa, delay your being cured, right? Let's say because of cold outside. So you need to keep warm. But if you keep going out, you're sick, you'll prolong the sickness, number one. Number two, it'll increase the sickness. Number three, it will cause pain. And the level, how do you, what's the threshold of pain? Like, you know, doctors will say, out of 10, how much is this pain? Well, we don't have that for Salat, but it's such a pain that you can't concentrate in prayer. These three types of related to leaving Jama'at because of sickness, these are the rule to remember. Either delays in the shifa, increases in the sickness, or pain that you cannot concentrate. Other than this, you have to go to the Jama'at masjid or go for Jama'at. While holding back either urine or stool, as we say in Australia, you're busting. I'm not sure in other countries what expression used for English, but we say someone needs to go to the toilet, he's busting. When food is presented while hungry, it is allowed to eat until satiated. Like, you can eat until, so someone's very hungry, because the point of Salat is to concentrate, khushu'. And if a person, is hadith, right? If the Salat is established and the dinner is ready, then a person, but this is like a person so hungry that he won't be able to concentrate in the Salat. Like, we're eating all the time, Allah forgive us, that we need to go diet some. But people in the past, you know, they when they get the meal, they're hungry. Like, they only ate when they were hungry. So someone's, like you could say, starving or hungry, and such a hunger that he can eat until his belly is full. Not just like a couple of morsels. We need a couple of morsels and we're okay because we've already eaten lunch and breakfast and had afternoon tea, right? By Isha time, we already had 3-4 snacks and so forth throughout the day. Maybe not you, but sometimes me. This is regarding such a hunger. When looking for someone lost, whoever fears that is a loss or destruction of the property or earnings, right? So have a look at this. You can miss jama'ah, right? If you fear loss of some in your trade or loss of some in your business or so forth, destruction of the property, like someone will rob it, like you can't leave it, or earnings. Fear the death of a relative or close friend, fear from the authorities, rain, etc., from the persistence of debtors while insolvent, right? If you go out to do jama'ah, let's say go to the masjid and you're going to meet your creditor on the way, right? So a person's excuse, or loss of travel group. If you're traveling companion, company, the group they're traveling, going to lose them, then you're excused from jama'ah. Salat of the ill, meaning the sick. It is required that the ill pray while standing, even in the bowing posture, when leaning or resting upon someone employed, if capable of payment. If they're unable to do that, however, sitting is permitted and sitting cross-legged is preferred. So the first thing is they should stand. And Sheikh Mutlaq, he mentioned something about people who can pray standing, you know, at the beginning of Salah. They've walked into the masjid. That means they can stand. But they can't bend their knees or they can't go for sajda. It's too much difficult. It's difficult for them, right? And to get back up sometimes is difficult, especially for the elderly. But they've walked into the masjid. That means they can stand, right? If standing is taking so much energy out of them that they can't, then they can sit, right? But to be start the Salat sitting down, right? When you can stand up, Salat will be invalid. And remember that it's saying cross-legged here because we didn't have chairs in masjids before, right? Historically, there was no concept of just dozens of chairs that we have now. Unfortunately, like, it's become a bit, I like, maybe it's something that can be in the Shafi fiqh, because they can have such a big distance between the imam. I noticed when I was in Egypt that they had a bench at the back of the masjid. So they didn't put chairs in the mosque, but that bench across the back wall, anybody is old, they pray, they sat there. What it did was it doesn't break up the safs with chairs, and the mosque doesn't look like a church. So sadly, there's so many chairs sometimes in Salat. That's a really nice way, minimal footprint way to do it. Anyway, so they used to sit down on the ground, like they prayed sitting down on the ground. So if they're unable to do that, however, sitting is permitted and sitting cross-legged is preferred. If they're unable to do that, then on their sides, the right of which is better. If they're unable to do that, they gesture and prostrate and bow to the best of their ability, making the prostration lower. If they're unable to do that, they signal with their eyes while the action is present in their heart. The same applies to the statement of someone unable to speak. So long as a sound mind is present, salat is not waived. So that's the like cutoff is there. If somebody's mind is there, then even Allah protect us all from such a condition that you can use your eyes to pray with, like do the action and with the keeping the, you can signal with the eyes. If standing or sitting becomes possible during the salat, they must be done, and then salat, then and the salat then completed. So, if in the middle of salat they feel better, then they should move to that action. If they suddenly feel I can't stand, then they have to stand. If standing is possible, a fard salat performed on a vessel which seat while seated is not valid. So on a boat, right? If salat standing is a fard salat is performed on a vessel while seated is not valid, right? So Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, when he was traveling, he will get down from the camel, do the fard nafal and so forth. He used to pray on the camel. If you're on a plane, if you can pray your salat before you get on the plane or afterwards, it's fine, right? Like you can, you know, sometimes, especially us in Australia. If you're traveling to any of the Muslim countries or Middle East, 14, 15-hour flights each way. So we're always going to get like one or two salats at least. So if you can pray before or after, or I do that, avoid praying on the plane. If there's no time, like your flight is there, like your flight leaves before Zuhr and gets to the destination after Maghrib. Now you've got two salats that you have to do. Obviously, you can join them. We'll get to that in a minute. But if no time, pray. It's wajib to pray standing and facing the Qibla. So you can ask the stewardess or steward, ask them, ask for 5 minutes, I need to play, and I can ask them for Qibla. Sometimes the programs have it, or just position of the plane. If it's facing east, depending on where you are, or west, you can get a rough idea where the Qibla is. You have to face in that approximate direction, get the Qibla. Some of the programs, some of the airlines, they have actually the on the screens, you can figure out the Qibla. But it's not that hard. Even from the map, you can figure it out as well. Especially you guys are educated. If you're on Zoom, you guys are educated, you know how to use programs and so forth. So it's not that hard to figure out the Qibla. If they don't get permission after asking and there's no space, then in your seat, you pray and face the Qibla. If you try to turn around. Now, big people like us, some of us are big, it might be challenging. Those smaller, you try your best as much as possible, turn around if you have to turn around. Nafl doesn't, these things don't apply for Nafl. These apply for Fard. It is valid on a standing or advancing mount for the following reasons. Being harmed by mud or rain. So you can pray. These are excuses, right? These are classical examples of when you can do it. Fear of being separated from a travel party. Fear of one's life from an enemy. So these are all necessities, right? These are not like, there's no option to get down. Or being unable to mount after dismounting. Maybe you're not an experienced rider. You don't know how to get up on a camel after you get down. It is a must to face towards a Qibla and do what is possible. The resting place of the limbs is considered during prostration sajda. So unnecessarily putting the forehead on fluffy cotton or praying on a swing invalidates it. So if you're praying on something that is spongy, for example, it says fluffy cotton, but today probably equivalent is something like a sponge, then you must squeeze it that you feel the ground. You cannot pray on something like cotton, sponge unless you squeeze it. Praying on a swing, in the old days, they had a swing, a big swing you can actually sit up on. You can't pray on that because you're disconnected from the ground. You have to pray on the ground. Like if there's, unless there's something harmful there, there's water there or something, you're not able to get down from there. But if you can get down on the ground, then if you prayed up there on those big swings, huge swings that you can pray on, stand on, then your salat will be invalid. Shortening the prayers. Question. 45 degrees. Yeah, that's 45 degrees each way is like that. That's the whole horizon in the direction. That's huge. That's like 45 degrees each way, right? I think the Shafi'i say 30 degrees each way, if I remember correctly. So they're a bit narrow, but the 45 degrees is huge. That's the whole horizon, the whole direction. So, you know, it's quite open in terms of the flexibility. I mean, the approximate direction, if you get exactly, it's good. But, you know, you got a huge leeway in terms of the direction. In the direction of the horizon of the Qibla, put it that way. It is recommended to shorten a 4-rakat salat. It's recommended. It's not compulsory, right? If you prayed 4, your salat is valid. In the Hanafi fiqh, if you prayed, if you're a musafir, you have to do 2, right? In our madhab, it's recommended, sunnah to do it. If you did 4, your salat is valid. For anyone who intends permissible travel, remember we talked about what's including tourism and sightseeing. If you're going for a highway robbery or something, na'uzubillah, haram, right? You can't shorten your prayer to a specific destination which reaches 16 farsakh. We talked about this before, about the destination. Sheikh Mutlaq says 80 kilometers. As per the madhab, it's 138 kilometers. This is a debate now that's sort of between the ulama and the recent era. It's a revisitation of what the distance is, right? If they surpass the homes of the village or tents, where does the safar start from? Where does the distance start from and where does the safar? The safar starts from the edge of the city, right? And it's, and the kilometers start from the edge of the city as well, the walls of the city. In the old days, the walls of the city marked the, for the musafir when they travel. Like the, like you, there was a wall around the city. You probably know, if you go to Lahore or Delhi or Damascus or the Muslim historical old cities, they'll have, they had walls and gates. So those marked where the people lived, and outside were farmlands or whatever, whatnot. But the community lived in those walls. Once you, like in the countryside, like you go, get, you're out away from the houses. So once you separate, the kilometers start, and the shortening of prayers is done from there. Although shortening is better, completion is not disliked. Repeating is not required if one, anyone who returns before reaching distance. So you did qasr for you shorten the prayer for asr, and then half an hour later you arrive home, and you still have 2 hours to maghrib. You don't have to repeat the salat. Whoever intends unlimited residence in a place, residence for more than 4 days, or follows the resident, is to complete it. He has to complete, meaning do the 4 rakat. So like if you've moved to a place, unlimited residence, you're going to stay in that country, you migrated to a country, you'll say residence for more than 4 days. If you decided to stay in a place for more than 4 days, 4 days, 20 rakat, 20 salats, more than 20 salats, you're a muqeem in that place. You'll have to, when you get there, you have to pray the complete prayer. Or following a resident, or follows the resident. If you're following a local imam, like you're a musafir, you stop in a town for 1 day, the imam is going to pray 4 dhuhr. You pray 4 with him. Perpetually shortening is legislated due to being withheld wrongfully. So mazlum, someone is oppressed, wronged, due to rain or staying to handle a need, without the intention to reside there more than 4 days, while not knowing when it will end. Sometimes Allah protect, like if someone becomes a prisoner or someone, some calamity happens, someone has to stay and sort out some family problem, but he didn't plan to stay there. As soon as that finishes, he wants to get out. Something else has caused it, not the fact that he wants to stay there. He can perpetually, he can be there for years and years and shorten. It happened to Sahaba radiallahu anhum when they're waiting, if I remember correctly, when they send the army to Azerbaijan or Armenia or one of those places. And then they have to, in Iran, somewhere there, border there, they had to wait like 6 months or something like that for the snow to melt. And they were just stuck there waiting there, so they couldn't move on. So you can perpetually, continuously shorten the prayers. And the last section is about combining salat. It is permitted to combine dhuhr with asr and maghrib with isha in either of their times. It is preferred to avoid it, except for the gatherings of the Arafah and Muzdalifah, which is then recommended. Combining can be done in the following 8 cases. We'll go back to just regarding Arafah and Muzdalifah. We'll visit this when you're doing Kitab al-Hajj, inshallah, in a few weeks. So don't worry about the Arafah. I'll explain that in detail then, inshallah. So you can combine Zuhr and Asr in Zuhr or Asr time, and Maghrib and Isha in Maghrib or Isha time. So you can do it in the, you can combine in the following eight cases. Traveling the distance of which is shortening. So if you can shorten the prayer due to travel, you can also do Jama. The ill who face difficulty if not combined, right? The sick person who's at home, he can combine Zuhr and Asr. He can't shorten the prayers because he's not Musafir, but he can join the prayers. The wet nurse, due to difficulty, the one who gives the milk from abundant filth. Because a baby, in the old days, they didn't have nappies. So if they urinate or whatever, then it comes on the clothes. So it's unavoidable. Wet nurse, due to difficulty from abundant filth. Pseudo-menstruation, I think pseudo is istihada. Chronic bleeding, like a lady can't stop the blood. This is not a haid or nifas. This is out of sickness. The bleeding's continuous. Then she can do jama. Anyone incapable of purifying themselves, or making tayammum for every salat. Anyone incapable of purifying themselves or making tayammum for every salat, not knowing the time, for example, the blind, etc., or due to some excuse or work which permits abandoning Friday and congregational prayer. You can join the prayers, that excuses that mentioned previously, for that which you can abandon the Friday and the congregation, you can join salat because of those reasons, right? The madhab is the most easiest mazhab. The Hanbali mazhab, when it comes to joining prayers, is the most easiest out of all the four mazhabs. Like people, there's a perception created that mazhab, Hanbali mazhab is harsh. But if you look in this masail, the Hanbali mazhab is the most flexible in these in joining of prayers. Combining between Maghrib and Isha is specifically permitted, even if prayed at home. Due to snow, cold, ice or sleet, mud, strong wind, strong cold wind, and rain which soaks the clothes, coupled with difficulty. So along with these, it's mashaqqa, difficulty. Regarding advancing or delaying the rest, and again, this applies to who? The person with the least protections, like the bottom of society, like the rule is applicable. This concession is available to everybody. If the lowest person in society is, it poses difficulty for him, right? If this causes difficulty for him, like I might have a car, umbrella, and coat, and it wouldn't cause any bother to me personally. However, a person only has his, and he walks outside, and if he's going to walk 100 meters or a kilometer from his home to the masjid, and he's going to get soaking wet, and it's going to be causing inconvenience for him, difficulty, then this concession is available to everybody. Remember, I mentioned before about the law. It allows, affords everybody the concession is available, or even though it looks at the, it gives the rule is for everybody, the law is for everybody, but also the concessions are for everybody. Restrictions are for everybody, but also concessions are for everybody as well. Even though I might not have such a difficulty, right? Think about Musafir, traveler, who is traveling in the old days on camel, 138 kilometers on a camel, or walking, right, in 3-4 days, or me driving in a car for 1.5 hours, I can still shorten my prayers and do jama as well, qasar and jama as well, despite the mashaqqa not being so much for me, right? So their concession for them has made it easy for others as well that might not be in such a difficult situation. Regarding advancing or delaying, the best is that which is easiest. Do you do Zuhr? When is preferred? Do you do Zuhr, Jama'ah in Zuhr time for Zuhr Asr, or do it in Asr time? You do which one is Arfaq, which is easiest. If they're equal, then delaying is preferred. If there's no ease in either one, delaying. Sequence is an absolute prerequisite for combining. Zuhr Asr first, Asr after. Why is delaying preferred? Because both Salat times have entered. If you pray at Asr time is entered and Zuhr time is entered as well. I mean, it's after the Zuhr time, but both time is entered. The following are prerequisites for combining during the time of the first salat. The intention to combine before the ihram of the first. Before you do takbirat ihram for the first salat, like zuhr, if you're doing it in the zuhr time, then you make intention for jama. Not separating the second, except with the equivalent of the iqama or a light wudu. like a minute or two, like in between. It shouldn't be a long gap between it, which would thus be invalidated by a sunnah routine salat. So if you do 2 rakat sunnah between dhuhr and asr, jama'ah, this would invalidate the jama'ah. The presence of an excuse at the beginning of both and at the first salam. So all the excuses mentioned that allow one to do jama'ah, they should be there. The presence of an excuse at the beginning of both, it has to be at the beginning of the dhuhr salat and the asr salat, the jama'ah, right? And the first salam, the salam of the dhuhr. Its continuity, except when combining for rain, until the completion of the second. So therefore, it is not invalid if someone makes ihram for the first because of rain, which ceases and does not continue, though it produces mud. If it does not produce mud, then it's invalid. You pray dhuhr, you start at asr, but that excuse should remain till the end, right? Till the end of, this is different, rain is different. It's not just for the two takbirs and salam, the takbir, the first takbir is of both, and the salam. It has to continue till the end for rain, for both. And then it ceased in the middle. But what happened was a new excuse is created by the rain, the mud that is produced because of the rain. If it does not produce mud, then it's invalid. Jama'ah is invalid. That means you have to go and come back because the rain finished in the middle of the second salat and then you left. There's no mud on the way. You'll have to come back for asr salat in the masjid on time. So that asr that you prayed will be nafal now, inshallah. You get reward of nafal, but not jama'ah. It's not jama'ah. If travel concludes with the first salat, the combining and shortening are invalidated. It is, however, to be completed, prayed for, and is valid. You're on a ship, you arrived in port. So you're not musafir anymore. Or your camel or your plane lands in the city, inside the city, right? So you're no longer musafir, right? So if you landed, I mean, of course, they're not going to allow you to do that. If travel concludes the first salat, the combining and shortening are invalidated, first thing. It is, however, but you've started the intention of 2 rakat, you can do 4 rakat. And is valid with an obligatory, as an obligatory. So that of 4 will be valid for the first. If travel is concluded during the second, they are invalid. So you're praying dhuhr, you're doing 2, you realize you're landing, you complete 4, your fard is done, right? You're already in the city and you're on the plane, for example, and you did another 2, you decided to do another 2 rakat or 4 rakat. Of asr, that's not valid. Jama is not valid. The only prerequisite to combine the second, we got one slide after this. I'm just about to finish. The only prerequisite to combine in the second time are to have the intention from the first, so long as there is still time to make it, and the presence of the excuse at the time of the second. The only prerequisite to combine in the second time are to have the intention from the first time, so long as there is no. Sorry, I'm just almost finished. The numbering is wrong on the next slide. So you didn't make intention at the beginning of dhuhr time. You left the dhuhr right till the end, to the point of there's not enough time. Then you don't have haq to do jama'ah. Then you have to pray dhuhr. And you have to pray asr because only a couple of minutes later, you left it till the end. You have to pray asr in its time. It is not prerequisite of validity to have only one imam. Sorry, it is not a prerequisite of validity to have only one imam. It is therefore valid if the follows behind two imams, meaning zuhr is prayed by one imam, asr is prayed by another imam. So for example, sometimes you're traveling, the locals, they'll pray the dhuhr, you join them. Then you immediately go back and pray asr as a jama'ah with another imam. That's fine. Behind someone not combining, one alone and the other in congregation, leading one. So you can do with the imam, you do 4, and you maybe by yourself, you're the only traveler. You pray with the imam the dhuhr, and then you pray your own asr 2 rakat. It's fine. First and another in the second, or with someone not combining. All right, that's it. That's it. Any questions? وياكم وياكم No questions? Then we leave it at that, inshallah. Jazakum Allah khaira. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Sorry, somebody asked a question. Those who want to leave, they can leave. And if I go from USA to the UK and I stay in the UK for below 4 days, would I be considered musafir there, or am I a musafir for the time? No, you're a musafir on the way there. If you leave the city, your city, if you leave the city, you exit the city boundary. Let's say you fly out of New York and you leave the boundary of New York, then you're a musafir. So you can shorten your prayers, and you're less in the UK, you're less than 4 days. So you're musafir there, and then you come back, you're still musafir until you enter, let's say you live in New York. When you enter the boundary of New York, then you're a muqim again. I'm not sure what the question is. So if you can send the question, then I will know, like, if you can send the question, then I generally don't bother, like, senior ulama with smaller questions that I can answer myself. Something I don't know, I'll either check it or go back to my notes, because it's very hard to keep everything in front of your mind. Sometimes my father, rahmullah, used to say something, you know, when Yusuf alayhi salam was thrown into the well in front of Yaqub alayhi salam's house, he didn't know that he was there, you know. And then, but when he was in Egypt, the shirt, he could smell the scent of. So sometimes you are on a high. I think he was quoting a famous poet. Sometimes you are, the world of knowledge is in front of you. Sometimes basic things can slip your mind. That's not a, we'll deal with that in Aqeedah course, inshallah ta'ala. That's not a fiqh issue, especially it's not an ibadat issue. That's a big topic that you're asking about. I'll make a note of it for the next course, the Ha'iyah course. But that's not an issue that, this is not a simple matter, right? It's a matter of shirk, and it's not to be treated lightly. There's a big difference among the scholars on this issue. Like, where is the line that is drawn between shirk and bid'ah on certain matters, especially to do with graves and the dead and so forth? So this is not there's a big discussion on this, so it's not we don't have time for that now. All right, I think that's it, inshallah. Barakallahu feekum. Hope you have a good week, inshallah ta'ala, and we'll see you next week. Assalamu alaikum.